Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments.
Hello, everyone. This is the Aha Moment, and my name is Erin Backus. And with me tonight, I have Irene Barber.
Hello, everybody. Happy November.
It did not feel like November yesterday.
I know.
Today, it got a little cooler, but yesterday was like 70-something. But of course, we have another Southern guest, which we get jealous for all the time. Derek Stowell, welcome.
Welcome. Hello.
Last week we had Lee Teal, so we were just like, what temperature is it in Florida?
I think we're almost 80 degrees today, and then I think Saturday there's a low of 25, so that's Tennessee weather.
Wow, that is a big jump.
Yeah.
Where in Tennessee are you, towards the mountains?
Up the street from me, I can see the Great Smoky Mountains. So I'm right there about 30 minutes from the park. And so we're kind of East Tennessee, Knoxville.
Beautiful.
South. Yeah.
I love that area. Get you some moonshine and Appalachian music. You're all good.
Yeah, it's a great place to live.
Moonshine. I have my apple cider tonight. I put it in these, you know, those big ice ball spears that you can.
Yeah. Play?
And so I did apple cider instead and I froze it.
Oh.
And I put it over Prosecco.
Ooh.
Fancy,
I like
right?
that.
I'm getting fancy.
We call those apple Bellinis or something like that.
Oh, that's even fancier. So, well, welcome to the Aha Moment. For those of you who don't know what the Aha Moment is, I hope you listened to our awesome introduction. Give us feedback on that. We're working on it. We're doing the best we can.
I think it sounds pretty damn professional myself.
I thought it was pretty cool. I was getting nifty with the music. I was listening, you know, I'm getting really nifty with the editing process now. But this is episode 20. I just said it earlier.
This is episode 28.
So thank you everyone for listening, downloading, sharing, talking about. We met so many of you at the conference. And it was so wonderful to meet our listeners and see that we have an impact going on. So it's really, really nice to hear that.
Yeah. Derek, can you share with our listeners something you just shared with us, that anecdote about one of your students?
Oh, yeah. So I've got, you know, some people interested in our education program we're offering at the university. One of the people that emailed me was they're asking lots of questions about horticultural therapy. And then I was like, hey, you know, you could check out this podcast. And like, I've listened to every single one of those. And it's just so inspiring and just gives me so much excitement to be involved with horticultural therapy. So she had already listened to all of them. So
when
she was trying to figure out what she wants to do. So it's really exciting.
Yay. Love it.
That's so nice to hear.
Yeah.
Of course, if you don't know him by now, Derek Stowell is the current immediate past president of the American Horticultural Therapy Association. Derek is a certified therapeutic recreation specialist and a professionally registered horticultural therapist. He is the education and horticultural therapy program administrator for the University of Tennessee Gardens. Derek is responsible for creating the University of Tennessee Gardens Horticulture Therapy Program. He holds a BA in Environmental Studies and Outdoor Recreation from Maryville College. Where's Maryville?
It is 30 minutes south of Knoxville, so it's a small liberal arts college at the foothills of the Smoky Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And MS in Therapeutic Recreation from the University of Tennessee. Derek received his PhD in plant, soil, and environmental sciences from the University of Tennessee just recently. Well, a couple of years ago, right? Or
yeah, it's 2 years ago now.
Yeah. So we are very, very glad to have him on. I know he's super busy. So go for it, Irene.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Erin, for that presentation.
It sounds presentation. Yeah.
Well, gosh, you know, these guests that we have, they have such extensive bios. It's
it's very, we're very lucky to have
awesome.
Such proficient experts in our, in this podcast. So thanks. So Derek, as you know, the title of this podcast, The Aha Moment, we really like to just get down to like the origin story of your aha moment. Perhaps it's several aha moments that you may have had to become where you are now. But we also just wanted to get a sense of what you do in a daily kind of curriculum or a daily routine. What does it look like in the day of Derek Stowell right now? And then rewind a little bit for us.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about what I do now, what my days look like. I'll talk about how in the world I got here. So
yeah.
And, so it's kind of it's a long roundabout story, but it all kind of makes sense, I think, when it all came together. But so, you know, for the University of Tennessee, I run horticultural therapy programming for the University of Tennessee Gardens. And so we're part of the State Botanical Gardens of Tennessee. And I started that program in 2012 when I started working at the university. And so that based on that work, it is really just doing programming for community groups. We do a lot. We did a lot more prior to the pandemic with assisted living, memory care, long-term care facilities. We have a mobile program, so we have a little foldable wagon. We have little soil trays and,
awesome.
And box stuff up and go and take it to the facilities. So that's the main work of what we do. And then we do some other things with vocational training for students, high school students who have disabilities. And we've done a variety of things, including programs with veterans over the years too. Mm-hmm. So my day, you know, I do that. And then I just, this year we actually launched our horticultural therapy certificate program at the university. So it's the 9 hours of horticultural therapy coursework. And I can just say before launching that, I would not have realized how much work and effort it takes to launch three college level courses. It was just a lot of work. So of writing the content. And then I also supervise interns, and I was looking back a little bit. I supervise some horticultural therapy interns, but also therapeutic recreation interns from the university. And so they help me running the programs, do the day-to-day tasks of what they do. So I do more office work now and supervision and content writing than I do getting out and doing the actual practice. And then, you know, so that's kind of what my day looks like. Is
you're the backbone. You're now the backbone of what you've created. So you have to sustain it on that level.
Yeah.
So do you actually have the equivalent of horticultural therapy interns as you do recreational therapy interns?
So I've supervised two people that were working on the HTR horticultural therapy internship.
Yeah.
Most of the interns right now, and I was just looking back, most of the interns I've worked with over the last 10 years have been therapeutic recreation interns. So
okay.
Kind of introducing them to the field and the practice and the profession a little bit as part of that. But I'm also, you know, I'm entertaining working, doing other internships, like online internships with horticulture therapy students too. So I'm not opposed to that. It's just right now our certificate's online too. So a lot of the folks are in other parts of the country. So it doesn't work for them to necessarily come here since we don't have a paid internship. So it's not, you know, it's real hard to move to do an internship, not have an income for that.
Right. However, at least you have that mobile horticultural therapy program where that could be a good outlet for perhaps new interns to participate in too. So, and going to vocational programs or doing the programs for veterans. Did you have a lot of flexibility and empowerment supporting you along the way as you kind of determined what was really effective for your, you know, for UT?
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the things I just look back on it and really realize my direct supervisor, how supportive she was, Dr. Sue Hamilton. She was the director of the gardens. She was my chair for my PhD. And she hired me. It would just always just, I could present an idea to her and she's like, go do it. And that's kind of how she managed and cool. You know, provide the weight and support and encouragement, and of all of her staff. And so that's one of the things I think because I'm where I'm at because of that, and her mentorship that way. But the other amazing thing, and, you know, really just, I love working for the University of Tennessee because particularly that I work, you know, we have several different units, and what I work for is the University of Tennessee Institute of Agriculture. So it's all the ag stuff, soil, plant science, animal science, the veterinary school. But then, and this happens across the main campus too, but just the administration at this university is so supportive about folks, about taking ideas and moving forward with it. And that's what has helped me do what I do. And if I didn't have that support, it couldn't have been possible.
Yeah. And as far as a budget too, did you have to create your budget or was that kind of spoon fed to you?
My original title was the HGTV, UT Gardens Educator. So we did receive a funding from HGTV.
That's cool.
So it was a 5-year funding mechanism to support me developing the horticulture or the education programs. At the end of that 5 years, the money ran out. So my job was to become self-supporting through program registrations, grants, fundraising. And that's kind of how I got, you know, into getting into the PhD as we started. Dr. Hamilton told me to meet with the dean of the college, Kala Beal. You know, I met with her, I gave her a proposal and she looks through it. I'm sitting down with her and she says, "You think like a PhD. you need to go get your PhD." And so that's kind of how I did it. I really wasn't ever planning on doing it, but through her encouragement and through all that, I started finding other grants and got more funding. And now I'm in a position that is funded through the university through our ag research program. But okay. I'm also still supporting, you know, the income from our programs is vital for me. And I've got, right now I've got 2 part-time people with the horticultural therapy program and then 1 full-time person, with the education program.
Mm-hmm. To what I think maybe I'm experiencing too, that you may experience working at botanical gardens and relying on grants for funding of any horticultural therapy programs is that I had to create quantifiable evidence and documentation as far as identifying the efficacy and the value of the program. So how do you, I think this is important for anyone who is going to go into horticultural therapy or that they already are in, but how do you provide that quantifiable evidence or documentation that is going to support your grant funding?
You know, that's a really great question. Some of that really is interesting because when we started doing the program with assisted living facilities, I kind of asked them, I said, what kind of information do we need to collect and document for you? And they're like, well, we only need to know who's attending, which is, and that's based on state funding. And so basically for assisted living facilities, they have to report to the state. They have to come up with a calendar of activities and they have to report that the people are attending. So, which is, I think we're missing out a lot there by not doing more measuring and documenting things. But I think some of the
there's that PhD student coming through.
But, you know, so one of the things we did do is we developed a veterans program in 2017, and we got a funding from a local funder. I connected with a psychology professor, and she's the one that's like, you need to publish this. And I was like, oh, I never thought of that. So we did. We collected the data. We got an IRB approval and we published it. So what I do is, you know, I'm trying to document what I'm doing and then also find ways to publish that and share that through presentations that I do to the profession and also other professions. Since I'm a CTRS, I do. I'm trying to develop some online webinars for different healthcare profession so they can learn more about what we do and document. So,
right. And so having the chance to integrate hort therapy into those other publications that recognize different therapies as well, not just recreational therapy, but how horticultural therapy can be recognized by, you know, landscape architects or physical therapy or occupational therapy. If we can get into those publications, that's really valuable.
Yeah. So,
thank you for doing that. I think that seems to be one, you know, area for sure that our profession as horticultural therapists could certainly continue increasing its capability and, you know, just having more of that research background and that quantifiable research. We, you know, the one nice thing about what we have as horticultural therapists is using the American Hort Therapy Association has that Journal of Therapeutic Horticulture. And I do think that that is a great resource, and I hope we can continue distributing that beyond our, you know, parameters, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
So now get us into little Derek. Derek into the world.
She's been in this. Irene has been in this. Feel of asking about the, like, what about little Derek?
So,
it's so funny. I'm sorry.
So we found, you know, I found horticultural therapy when I started working for the gardens. And I think it was Dr. Susan Hamilton that said something. She's like, you know, because I came in, I was a certified therapeutic recreation specialist. I worked for a national nonprofit running camps for kids with limb loss for 5 years. And I started working here teaching environmental education. I was like, I loved it. You know, it was a great opportunity. But I really missed that therapeutic side. And I'm pretty sure it was her at one point said, well, there's something called horticultural therapy. And I'm like, what is that? So I started looking and I was like, oh, okay. I found the AHTA's website and I was like, professional registration, what is that? And I was like, okay, I'll look at it. I'm like, well, I'm a CTRS. I've already got all the science coursework out of the way.
Yeah.
I need to do HT coursework and the horticulture coursework.
Right.
And do another internship. And so I connected with a colleague who also was Renee Malone. She was a CTRS and also an HTR. And so she did my internship supervision once I completed work and really encouraged me throughout a lot of this. But so I went back, and because I worked for the university, I mean, fortunately, I've got one of the greatest benefits is that I get tuition. So that helped that cost for me and was able to do that. But, you know, really how I started it, even doing what I do and what I went to college for, it really goes back to just my growing up, like you were talking about. You know, I'm from Tennessee. You know, my parents hiked. And I was in Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts, and we camped. And, you know, my dad, he was a gardener. There was times in my past, we lived on a quarter acre, you know, in a subdivision, like about a quarter acre lot. And like the whole backyard was a vegetable garden at times, off and on throughout, you know, when I was really young. And then in middle school, he became friends with a guy that worked at a garden center. And if you ever become friends with somebody that works at a garden center, you're going to start planting more things because, you know, they can get you some deals. Yes. They also had a really awesome yard, and my dad wanted to have a garden that looked just like that. So he built a koi pond. I actually helped him dig it. We built by the time they moved out of that house, most of the yard was garden trees, you know, shade garden kind of stuff. He just took away, got rid of more and more of our turf and started putting garden stuff in. So,
and increased the value by 30% at resale if they ever did that.
So, you know, that was pivotal. And I think, but the most pivotal things that I experienced was really in high school. And so my dad worked at a company called Eastman Chemical Company, and it used to be Kodak. So the camera company, the George Eastman, the guy that created the cameras and all that process and films, had these chemical companies to supply the chemicals to make the fuel.
Right.
And so one of their facilities was in Kingsport, Tennessee, which is where I'm from. And they had a hiking and canoeing club. It was the Tennessee Eastman Hiking and Canoeing Club. And so in high school, I started doing volunteer trail work. They'd go out and they'd maintain the Appalachian Trail, mm-hmm. which is about 45 minutes to an hour and a half from where I'm at, depending on where I grew up, mm-hmm. depending where you go. And I started doing that. Like that's what I did. Believe it or not, I was not the cool kid. I did not play sports or anything. And so I started doing this stuff. And I really started connecting with a bunch of retired guys that, every Saturday and Sunday in high school, I started doing this. I was going up and spending 10 hours, going up on the trail, building trail, maintaining the Appalachian Trail. Mm-hmm. And what really was pivotal was in the summers, I look back and I think, this is incredible. So in the summers, these retirees, they go out and they do the projects during the week because they didn't have to work. And they invited me to go with them. And so there were times in the summers of my high school career that I was on trail, up on the Appalachian Trail, 6 days a week.
Wow.
Doing something. Wow. So I helped, cutting back weeds, building bridges, building mm-hmm. fences, digging trail, mm-hmm. designing, laying out trail. And then one of the guys, his name was Edward Oliver, and some of his friends, they used to do a summer trip out west every year for a week. And this was back before, nowadays you can't transfer tickets to other people. Like that just doesn't happen. But back then, they had a friend, there was a high school student too, that he was from out of state. He got in a car accident and couldn't go. And they had this trip planned to go to Utah for a week-long backpack trip.
Uh-huh.
And they said, would you like to go? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So he transferred the ticket. I got to go out there with them. And there was another high school student that was a relative of one of them. And so that connection to outdoors
yeah.
and nature and that is what really got me on this path.
Right.
And it was just, I felt like I belonged when I was mm-hmm. out there. I felt at peace. And I really, in high school, when I was looking at what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, I was really thinking, I want to share that with people.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to see what I get out of this and see the value of this. And so that's where I didn't really know what to do. So I found some programs about environmental work and outdoor recreation. That's why Maryville College had a really awesome program for my work study. I got to lead groups hiking and climbing walls and
awesome
stuff. So I was paid to do what I love to do. And they had a really good program and had some great scholarships. So that's kind of got me on the path. After I graduated, I went, took a year off, did AmeriCorps and volunteered and taught kids mm-hmm. in schools about gardening and environmental education and recycling. And then I found another program called Therapeutic Recreation or Recreational Therapy. I was actually going to church, the church I was going to, one of the attendees was like the leader of this program called Camp Koinonia. And so, and they had a graduate assistantship position and I applied for it and got mm-hmm. it. And so I was responsible as a graduate assistant for running that program. It was a camp for kids with multiple disabilities where this is an amazing program. And,
this is still going on today.
It is. Yeah. And so that's what's incredible. It started back in the 70s, I believe. What key about that program was it was a college class. And so the people that ran the camp were college students. So they would take about 100 to 150 college students. We'd pair them up one-on-one with a student with multiple disabilities. And these were kids that had probably never left their home before, gotten out of the house. So, and we ran a week-long camp for them and they did that as part of their college degree.
Uh-huh.
And so we got to help be one of the leaders of that. Just amazing to see college students we would have these football players come in and just life-changing experiences for a lot of us.
And so talk about you know, exploring adaptability or getting, you know, building your awareness and testing the waters out as far as what kind of adaptiveness you can create for those students and for those college students to incorporate. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was some of the first times when I started getting into that, you know, working, you know, I knew a couple kids in elementary school and younger that had disabilities, but even back then it wasn't quite as people weren't more as much as they are today. They're a little bit more today where they have this inclusion where people are in classes and they kind of get to know people more. This was one of the first experiences I had working with folks that had some pretty severe disabilities, and so it was challenging for me, personally, but also it just helped grow me as a person, and really learned like how to communicate with folks that have speech problems, you know, and people who had autism and I mean, just some very rare diseases, rare medical conditions, but what it did, and I think even with the college students that took part of it, is it really allows them to start seeing people for the human being that they are,
and not exactly
the ability that they have. And so that is what was awesome about it. And then we teach them how to develop lesson plans, and they, you know, they learn how to create an activity, and how to adapt the activity, how to plan the activity, and implement.
Is this so that one? See.
Yeah, it's at the it started actually at Virginia Tech in the 70s, and Dr. Gene Hayes moved to the University of Tennessee, I think in the 80s or somewhere around there, and then it's still going on. So it's part of the therapeutic recreation program at the University of Tennessee.
What's it called? Camp? What?
Yeah, I was just gonna ask that.
So it's Koinonia. It's a Greek word, and stands for like friendship and caring community.
Okay.
And so it's part of our TR program here at the university.
That's cool.
And so by doing that, you were in that nature-based programming, but then you really delved into horticultural therapy. And so I guess, do you find that you overlap the two frequently, or do you have to keep them somehow designated from one another?
So I can, for me, my philosophy is kind of, it kind of blends them both.
Yeah.
In a way I look at it. And the real thing is that, you know, there's this connection to nature, you know, there's a looking like going out into wilderness and spending a week out in the woods, is one thing. But then also, growing plants and caring for plants and tending plants is kind of something else. And so I see kind of those differences, but my philosophy is when I look at it is, and as a rec therapist, you know, gardening is considered a leisure activity. It's one of those, it's actually a top leisure activity at, you know, in the US.
Yeah.
A lot of people garden as their leisure time. And so therapeutic recreation deals a lot, or recreation therapy deals a lot with leisure and leisure. Right. Activities. So, and it's kind of like a recreational therapist can look at and do have a garden, and it can be a leisure activity, but it's not necessarily horticultural therapy if they're not trained in horticultural therapy. You know, likewise, you know, as a rec therapist, you know, music, you know, you can do stuff with music, but you aren't a music therapist because you haven't had that specific training and professional registration or certification.
Right.
So that's kind of how but really how I view it is, my thought is, I think a lot of it is these connections to nature and life and living things is what really humans are missing out. I think and I was reading Charles Lewis's book, The Green Nature, Human Nature, the other day.
Yeah.
And one of the quotes, you know, this was written years ago. And he says that we basically cut ourselves out of nature and we put ourselves, you know, and it's gotten even worse since then, you know, of just walling ourselves out. Mm-hmm. And so my view is, in the work I do, is we can I can't always go up in the mountains and sit in a stream and fish or hike or camp out, but I can work on managing and growing plants every single day, no matter where I'm at. I could be in a yard that has a half acre, or I could be on a farm with 20 acres, or I could be in my office with some potted plants. And so that's what that's the connection. I think that when we're talking about the actual aha moment is, I think once I became registered horticultural therapist and really thinking through it, that's what I really noticed and realized, like, this is why this is important, because this can be done anywhere. And with somebody with limited resources or someone with unlimited resources.
Right.
It's true.
And you've been working with an organization somewhere down in the Caribbean islands, right? What was that?
Yeah. So it's the Caribbean Community-Based Rehabilitation Network.
And you were identifying how their minimal resources, but how quick they can make something come to fruition with just their little bit of materials that they have that they repurpose multiple times over.
Yeah. And so I think that's the thing is like, I think you were in the presentation. You were like, we want to learn how they got all these resources, you know, because
sometimes
we kind of have a hard time thinking through how to get stuff, but they're innovative, they're creative, they
network. Motivated. They probably network with their community members that much more effectively too. And
just this past year with the Antigua and Barbuda group, persons with disability organization, the guy down there is Bernard. Like they built a hydroponic system. I mean, just after, you know, we were doing stuff and I met with him and he's like, he was showing me, he had like spinach leaves that were like this big. I mean, the amount of produce was just incredible.
Just so people know, when Derek just said this big, that was about a foot long, I think. It's like people showing off how big their trout is. We're showing off how big our spinach leaf is. I think that's just really inspiring to mention that you point out how you can do... Nature's not always the most accessible all the time to everybody, but having just the smallest of plant life in a very confined environment is available for the most part. And I think one thing you've mentioned too is leisure is not luxury. And I feel like sometimes that's a missing or like that gets the two L's get confused or something like that amongst people. But leisure is important for our well-being, for just in general, like living and giving ourselves that gentle reminder, you know, and mindfulness, opportunity for mindfulness.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think it's the idea of, you know, we got to find a way to take care of managing our stress and that's leisure for people is a way to do that.
Yeah.
Not everybody had, and that's what, you know, the philosophy of therapeutic recreation or recreational therapy is the same, is that, you know, as a therapist, people that we work with don't have the ability to do that because of illness or mental health or disease. Mm-hmm. And our job is to help them regain that skill. And I think as a horticultural therapist, it's the same thing. Not everybody has, everybody could garden, but not everybody has the ability. And there's a knowledge ability and the functional skills and ability needed to do that. But as a horticultural therapist, that's my goal, is to help them learn and see and then go and do on their own. Mm-hmm. So they can continue to maintain their health once we're done working with them.
Right. Yeah. And giving them tools essentially to keep going on without our facilitation all the time, you know? Right. So, well, thank you so much, Derek, for giving us a little glimpse of your daily life as well as your journey of becoming a hort therapist. I know Erin has her signature question, so I'm going to throw the ball over to her court.
Caught it.
Yep, she caught it.
Listeners, that's me catching the ball. Oh my gosh. Oh, Irene. Okay. So what would be... I'm not the best at like connecting, and Irene is really good at that. I'm just very blunt and straightforward. What would be your all-time go-to plant when like you're in session and you're running a session? What's your favorite plant to use in session?
Oh gosh,
or even like a genre. Some people say, "Oh, I can't do that. I'll give you a few." So whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I think that might. You know, that's probably the hardest thing. But I think I've been doing a lot of. I'm thinking of the easy propagation stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe the genre, but you know, like coleus, and doing stuff by division, like a lot of just simple house plants like peperomias and those plants, just because you can propagate them real easily. And that's one of the things I do a lot with folks. And depending on which group and their goals, it's going to be a little different. But there's a lot of really cool processing activities. So if you're doing like behavioral health with those folks, and they're fairly inexpensive. And again, most of the time you can see pretty easy, pretty quick success with them taking root with those things.
Yeah.
Propagation is such a big part of being an HT.
Yeah.
I mean, and we just learned about
coleus being very, they have 50 different cultivars that were bred at the University of Florida, yeah, where Lee works.
Yeah.
And so I was telling her how I was surprised by that because of the heat in Florida. And I wouldn't expect that coleus could do well, but they've actually bred it so that it was, they could showcase this. Yeah. That could tolerate the hotter, you know, sunnier conditions that, you wouldn't really regularly associate coleus, enjoying.
But you have a success with peperomia.
Those take a lot longer.
Yes,
I don't. So
we did leaf cutting this year with groups, and it took forever. But they do eventually start sending up new stems. Coleus is good because you can cut that. You can just pinch it off, and
yeah,
just gets about half an inch from the soil. It's gonna.
Yeah.
I've seen pieces out in the garden that, you know, somebody was weeding and they broke off a piece down, and it was like laying sideways and there's like roots in the ground already.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit more work. Coleus
is for the beginners. Peperomia, yes, is for the advanced.
Right.
You know, like when you have short patience, you go with coleus.
Yeah.
When you have a longer stamina of patience or whatever, you go with peperomia.
Ooh, I use snake plant for patience.
Yeah. Oh.
I tell my patients to write patience on there because it's going to take a long time.
But the trick is, you know, here's the difference. I do have the fortune of having a top scientific greenhouse that I get to bring all the cuttings from.
Yeah.
And I stick them in. And so that does also help, I think, with, you know, with the ability and success, even our seeds. I mean, it's just incredible looking at how quick our seeds will germinate because of the growing conditions we get them in versus, you know, a standard, you know, hoop greenhouse or something. So I do recognize that I have got a few tools that not everybody has that kind of resource available to them.
Yeah. You have some maximum resources available to you. Unlike your,
meanwhile, I have like three grow lights that I systems that I made myself, and that's what.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But that's so wonderful.
Good old cellophane nearby.
I didn't even do that. I'd be like, okay, they died. I gotta start again.
I think those are great. Those are really good. Two very different plants to identify too. So I think that would be great for people to research some more about. And peperomia is a huge genus as well.
There's so many different ones too. That's really interesting and neat to see the different colors of the leaves and sizes and all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They're my arch nemesis.
I give them away as gifts and little wet, that, you know, wet towelettes, and people take them and then they root them and they have success. I don't know what's.
I've been a horticulturist for I don't know how long, and I just, it's not my plant.
I would say that definitely the stem, like getting it without the woody stem bundle, and you're only doing like the individual stems, and then you have to just like you have to have contact with the soil where the leaf is. And just like a begonia, a tuberous begonia. And then it will root from that little axis, the peduncle, right where the leaf and the stem merge. And if, as long as that's nice and wet, and
I hear the botanical, I mean, I hear what you're saying botanically, but what does not happen for Aaron is it doesn't do it. I don't know. It roots and then it, like, I guess it rots out. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's.
Yeah. Some people, we use a lot of perlite. Just some folks will do the perlite and straight perlite because of that.
Oh, yeah.
We have a system too. So, I mean, that helps.
Yeah.
the right moisture. But yeah, the soil definitely get, it causes a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Smart idea.
Good tricks. I hope we have a few listeners who will test these theories out and see which one they go for. So
yeah. Well, us three can probably talk plants all night.
But I know.
Derek, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and hang out with us tonight and tell your story. We loved hearing about it.
And if you could just articulate or spell out the website that people could go to for UT Gardens.
Yeah, so it's www.utgardens.tennessee.edu.
Okay.
Let me make sure that's right, because we got a new one. Let me see if it still goes there.
Oh, geez. Sorry, I didn't mean to make this. Those EDU websites, man, so complicated.
Yeah.
Looking it up.
I'm looking it up because I may have told you something wrong. It used to work.
I'm sure if you just type it in Google search, it will come
up. Yeah, that'll be the easiest. I don't know. It's not working today. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Because the real website is like super long.
Yeah.
You know, I will have to.
And all that.
I'll have to write the website in the post when I do the social media post.
That's a good idea.
I'll find the website for you all listeners.
Thank you, Derek. And thank you everybody for joining us this evening.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.